Cedar Rapids, so through Tama.
We got it pretty good.
Two lanes there. And it's just down traffic. Yeah, people passing, cars can head on.
God, Linda, you sit down and everybody gets quiet. Pretty impressive power.
Everybody wants the meeting to go fast.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Good morning. It's 10 o'clock on May 28th, 2019, and I'm calling to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. And I would invite you to join us, if you would like to, as Supervisor Sanders leads for the last time in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, in terms of public comment, we have a public comment session here for public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody who would like to address supervisors? Okay. Before I close the public comment section, I'm going to say a couple words myself. It's been my pleasure to work with Rick Sanders as a fellow supervisor, not as long as I thought we were going to. I do remember, though, before I became a supervisor, somebody said to me, you know, Linda, you don't have to agree with somebody on everything in order to work with them, which is really good because we don't agree on everything. But I thought I'd get more on the laugh than that. Maybe people think I'm okay. But I want to thank Rick for his leadership and particularly thank him for the vision that he has had for Story County and the drive he has had in getting that vision accomplished and his wonderful communication and persuasion skills in whenever he's been working on an issue, how he's helped people see the importance of it, how it's good for Story County as a whole. It has been quite a pleasure working with him, and I look forward to working with him in his new capacity. So thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Linda. My persuasion skills seem to not work on you, however, because you and I seem to find plenty of areas that we don't agree. I've enjoyed the short time that we've worked together, and I just want to say how good I feel about leaving Story County in such capable hands as yours. I'm excited to see who the new appointment is. And I'm sure that you guys, along with Loris, will make a great team, and I'm excited to see the future of Story County. But thank you for everything, and thank you for stepping up and leading Story County probably sooner than you wanted to, but it was the right thing to do. So thank you very much.
Anybody else for public comment? Okay, then we will close the public comment session, and we will move on to organization of the board. By the way, Loris Olson, Supervisor Olson, is not able to be here today, so I think if it's okay, we can just defer this.
So I would prefer, even if Loris was here, I think you guys need to wait until a new member is seated and talk this through. At that point, that's the way it's traditionally been done here, and so I was going to push back a little even if Loris had been here, but I'm fine just moving on.
Okay. We will then go on to recognition by local law enforcement of the 9 years of public safety support by Supervisor Sanders and County Attorney Jessica Reynolds, and several people from our police departments are here. And Sheriff's Office.
Let's do something about that monitor. Linda, do you know anybody who can take care of that? That is.
I have not a clue.
I'm fine.
Maybe hire a chair.
Well, good morning. My name is Jessica Reynolds. I'm the Story County Attorney, and I
joined here today with representatives from our local law enforcement agencies to thank Supervisor Sanders for his 9 years of service to Story County, and particularly for his unwavering commitment and support of our local law enforcement agencies. I'd just like to introduce quickly all the agencies that are here today. We've got Assistant Chief Sebastian from ISUPD. We have Captain Lenny from the Sheriff's Office. We have Ray Reynolds from the Nevada Public Safety Department. We have Chief Soule from Chickasaw PD. Mike Cox from Story County Conservation. Jeff Huff, Commander Huff from Ames PD. And of course, the Sheriff. 9 years ago, when Supervisor Sanders joined the board, Story County looked quite a bit different. Employees, including me, had just gone through a 2-year wage freeze. Expenses exceeded revenues. There was no interest in funding a much-needed law enforcement radio system countywide. And the county functioned very separately. Each department was kind of in its own silo, and we really didn't interact with each other unless it was absolutely necessary. As soon as Supervisor Sanders started, he got to work changing everything that I just mentioned for the better. And it wasn't easy. Let me repeat that. It was not easy. His positivity and enthusiasm to make things better was contagious. And soon, this better functioning county under his leadership implemented things that had never even been imagined, such as Bacon's Lake Engineering, smooth implementation of regional mental health services, the development of StoryCom, which is almost coming to its conclusion, and a pay matrix to improve prosecutor retention, as well as the soon-to-open Tedesco Learning Environmental Corridor. That's to name a few, and I had to narrow it down for this speech. It was John Quincy Adams that said, "The true mark of a leader is someone whose actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more." Under this definition of a leader, or any other that I found, you are a true leader, Supervisor Sanders. Story County citizens have all been well served by you. You are leading Story County government better, way better than you found it. Thank you on behalf of our law enforcement community and on behalf of Story County citizens. May God bless you, protect you, and encourage you as you step into your new role as president of ISU Research Park. One thing I know for sure is that you will lead them better than you found them. You can't help it. That's just who you are.
Very nice. Thank you.
Well, with my 27 years so far as Story County Sheriff, as you can imagine, I've been through numerous board members. And starting out, I learned from the first board, and then I found out how to break in new board members as they came. But nonetheless, you always have a coming together and building of trust. And I've done that with each board member that has come on since my first 4-year term. And RIP is no different. And we had challenges starting out. And but the thing that I can appreciate about RIP is that we could always talk straight with each other. When you said something, there was no going behind the back. It was just straight, direct, and that's what it was. And I always appreciate that about RIP. We started out with a new budgeting practice, which we've done many of those styles over the past number of years, that I think Rick had a big part of bringing forward. And that was one of the things that I really pushed back on initially. I, first of all, got to build the trust. It wasn't there yet. But after a couple of years of budgeting, we realized that we were much better off and farther ahead by following that lead. So the years that we've had at the Story County Sheriff's Office and the accomplishments we've made, not to mention the programs that we're continuing to work on. Jessica mentioned StoryCom, and I think that's one of the biggest and greatest successes for public safety in Story County. Public safety is really nothing if we can't communicate and we can't talk about what's going on. So you've had a tremendous part in that leadership and bringing that together. Along with Jessica, you will be missed, and we appreciate the things that you have brought to Story County, and particularly, most important, to law enforcement in general and to Story County Sheriff's Office. Thank you, and good luck in future endeavors.
Thank you. Chief Sykosh couldn't be here today, so I'm representing the Ames Police Department, one of your local partners,
from that mysterious land west of here called Ames. I want to thank you for your service to everybody in Story County, especially law enforcement. As the sheriff just spoke about, StoryCom, new radio system, statewide radio, huge undertaking, but not the first time that we've done something like that. You look at what we have right now with the shared records management system between a lot of these agencies where we're saving the taxpayers a lot of money by sharing not only that information, but sharing the cost. So we, again, would also wish you the best of luck. That's the bad thing about good people is they move on sometimes and they go somewhere else, and I'm sure you'll do a great job there. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Now there are a few agencies that have a small commemorative item they'd like to present to you if you would come forward, and then we'll take a group picture.
Badger Council.
So Director Martinez cannot be here and involved in the hiring process, but we wanted to present this plaque as a true leader for Story County. We look forward to a radio system for the shop. We hope that whoever fills your shoes has the vision that you have. So with that, we're presenting a plaque to you.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, stay up there. Now, sir.
Go ahead, buddy.
Julio Castillo from Hurst.
Thanks, everybody.
Have operated 17,064 hours for that service. So we've served a lot of people and we've done a lot in Story County. When we started the year, fiscal year 19, our trip costs had gone up significantly because of the changes that Medicaid made in not funding public transportation for the SCLs. And so we were at a 3209 per trip cost. And we have gone back and we've worked really hard this year to look at everything from how to reduce our costs to how to increase our revenues. And our trip costs now in Story County are 24.8. So we have gone down significantly and we are hoping to continue to be able to do that. We have not cut any services.
We did change the ongoing shuttle that we have between Nevada and Ames and Boone and Ames. We looked at the ridership, and on average, average of only one person riding each time we went. So the expense of operating the shuttle versus what we were able to recover from those expenses just didn't make sense. We went back to doing it on a fixed schedule, only coming like 6 to 8 nights a day versus every hour on the hour.
Has ridership gone up, average ridership, since you went to that, or are you still at about one per?
It's down to like 3 or 4 people riding at a time. Sometimes there is only one, it's just kind of depends on the day.
So with a lot of what has been going on in the public transportation industry, we've really kind of taken a look at where else we need to be. And I know Brooke's done a lot of work with economic development and with Loris on trying to work on commuter trips and how we can do some of that. So this year, starting July 1st, I believe that's what our goal target date is, we will be implementing a van pool. There will be 2 different options for that so that we can help people get to work that way, and we are still working on how to do some shuttles to bring more people in. So that's one direction that we're working. And then the other thing is that we have, we're still the only small regional transportation provider in Iowa that is doing a lot of the technology things, like having an app that people can schedule from. We got in on the ground floor of that, so they are doing a lot of updates to that. So probably within the next 3 months, we'll see that app have a lot of updates that are going to make it easier for people and streamline it more. So we're hoping to get more people to use that, and that will keep the call volume down in our call center because we are not replacing positions right at the moment when somebody leaves in that. I'm just going to toot my own horn here for a minute, but so last week Brooke and I went to Palm Springs for the Community Transportation Association of America's Expo, and I had been nominated and selected by them to be the Community Transportation Provider of the Year.
Wow.
So I was selected. That is the first time it's ever been in Iowa as far as transit manager. So I wanted to say thank you to Story County for just allowing us some opportunities to do some things that made that possible for Herta and myself.
Well, congratulations and
thank you.
For being the kind of manager that can win an award like that. We all benefit from that.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
My only question is, are you going to be able to stay around a little bit? Because further down on the agenda, we have a funding request.
Yes, and we will be here for that.
You'll be here for it. Okay.
Okay.
That's the only question I had. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
And yes, congratulations
on
that award.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now we have consideration of minutes. I'll entertain a motion approving the minutes of the May 21st meeting.
So moved.
Second. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Next, consideration of personnel actions. I would entertain a motion approving the actions listed.
Moved as listed.
Second. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. They're approved. Next, consideration of claims.
I move approval of claims.
Okay, and I would second. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are approved. Now we have public hearing items.
Consent agenda.
Consent agenda. Did we just do that?
We did claims.
We did claims. Consent agenda. I'll entertain a motion.
I move consent agenda as listed.
Second. Sanders.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Consent agenda approved. Now we will move to public hearing items. We have consideration of resolution 19-113, an FY19 budget amendment. Assistant Auditor, Lisa Markley.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
This
budget amendment was published in the paper as required by law. So what I'm asking today is that we approve the budget amendment. It includes dollars basically for the story column, which is what we're amending in, the revenue and expense. We're in the process of selling a $3 million bond so that we can pay for StoryCom. We also will have a payment due here shortly before the end of the fiscal year, so we're going to go ahead and put that in. I also did put a little bit more money into the facade grant in the local option sales tax dollars and some more money for small community funding, which is in the assigned fund. So there's some dollars that are being requested in case those get funded. I wanted to make sure I had the dollars in there to do that. Basically, that's what the amendment is. After this amendment, we'll have a general fund ending fund balance unassigned of about 23%. It's about a half a percent less than it was last time, last month when we amended the budget. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
What else do you need?
So it would be the expectation that we're going to end right on the 25% in general funds.
Or a little higher.
Are you confident that this gets you to the end of the year?
Better.
Okay. I just want you to be confident. That's all I want.
Last shot at it.
Last shot.
What was the amount that you put in for the grant?
$140,000.
Okay.
Oh, facade grant, $10,000.
$10,000 facade. The local option.
That comes out of the local option.
That's what we budgeted.
So with the facade grants, we budgeted every year, and they have not drawn down all the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden they're drawing down all the dollars. So we haven't spent it the last 2 years, and now they're drawing down the dollars for those facade grants.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure I had enough money in there to cover that. Along with the in the small community funding, that's the general fund dollars, and that's assigned. So that was $140,000 I was talking
about. Okay. Any questions?
None.
Okay. Entertain a motion.
Let's do the public hearing first.
I will open the public hearing. Thank you for the notes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Is there any comment from the public? Okay. Not. We will close the public hearing.
I would move resolution 19-113.
Second. Any further discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Carrie, thank you very much.
Oh, you're not done seeing me, but I have to leave for a minute.
Okay, we'll wait if we need you. Okay. Then we're down to additional items. Additional item one, consideration of FY20 provider and program participation agreements with youth and shelter services, effective 7/1/19. Deb Childress is going to give us a brief report, and then there are some providers here in case we have any questions.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
So just to recap, the contract before you is the fiscal year 20 contract for youth and shelter services. And this is the boilerplate contract that we use for all providers. It was on the consent agenda last week, and it was pulled for some discussion. And then we decided at that point to table it for this meeting so that we would have representatives here from YSF and Community and Family Resources. So we do have folks here to answer specific questions. The concern, I believe, that Supervisor Olson had was possible duplication in substance abuse prevention and treatment services. Community and Family Resources has received that state grant to provide those services in a multi-county area. One of the things that they need to do yet in Story County is a needs assessment to determine what level of services are needed here in the county. I believe that will start sometime after July 1st. If that's changed, they can certainly talk about that. So in the meantime, we need to have the services provided, and that's what's contained in the contract with YSF to move forward. I think Laura's also had some questions about giving notice to YSF if those dollars through CFR could be made available here in Story County to provide those services. There is an amendment clause in the boilerplate contract, in this contract with YSF, for the county to make any kind of amendment to the contract. So there are some built-in things already to address those types of issues. So that's the background of the particular contract and the questions around it. And I'd be happy to try and answer questions, or we can have YSS or CFR representatives come forward.
I would also add that I did talk to Supervisor Olson just before the meeting, and when she called and said she couldn't be here, and she said she had discovered there was the thing she had been asking for was to change the termination or from 90 days to 60 days, but there's another clause in the contract that would allow a 60-day change in the contract.
Yeah.
And she said that she was now comfortable with that. She had not realized that.
Okay.
So do you have any questions?
No, I don't have any questions. I would just hope that future boards would continue to rely on our asset process and our asset volunteers to get to the bottom of these kind of things. And when we have a boilerplate issue, that we can handle it as a boilerplate issue. I would move approval of the FY20 agreement with YSS.
I would second the motion. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I'd just say, Andrew, I'm sorry you had to come over for this.
Okay. Then I'm going to call a question. Mm-hmm. Sanders?
Aye.
No. Go vote. Sanders, aye. Merkin, aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Now is Lisa Markley back? Yes, she is. Okay, snuck in. Consideration of Resolution 19-112 establishing Central Iowa Community Services Fund.
As you know, last week you approved the agreement for Story County to begin the fiscal agent for Central Iowa Community Services. That will begin July 1st. We will be taking over that duty from Madison County. On the consent agenda today was the software purchase that was necessary, which the region pays for. And what happened, in order to make a new fund for the county, board supervisors have to approve it. So that's what I am asking here today, is for you to approve this fund so that we can operate it as a non-budgetary fund,
yep.
Agency fund.
So, a motion?
Yeah, so I would move approval of resolution 19-112.
I would second the motion. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Lisa, and the entire auditor's office for taking this on. It's the right thing to do, and I appreciate it. I know it's extra work, but it's the right thing to do for our region.
Thank you, Ruby and Shelley.
Yep. Absolutely.
And Christy also, because we'll all take it on.
And I know from being on the CICS board that everybody was very grateful that Story County stepped forward. Yes.
With very little arm twisting?
No. Okay. So, Sanders.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. 19-112 is adopted. Next, consideration of resolution 19-114.
As always, whenever we amend the budget, we have to appropriate those dollars. If we don't appropriate them, they can't get spent. So all this is appropriating the dollars you just amended.
Move approval of resolution 19-114.
Second. Further discussion? If not, Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Resolution adopted. Okay. Now I think we're down to number four. Discussion and consideration of Herta's request for matching funds for $97,725 to replace 7 transit vehicles. Brooke Ramsey and Deb Shildreth will address it. Hello again.
Good morning. I had come in December and we had talked about a few different projects that Herta was working on at the request of Supervisor Olson. Which included the commuter shuttle, the van pool project, and for clarity, we wanted to make sure we expressed that the state of Iowa DOT had received a grant and it was a $7 million award from federal grant for bus and bus facility infrastructure investment program, specifically for rural transit vehicle replacements. HRTA did receive 10 vehicle replacements through that grant process, or were eligible for 10 vehicles, seven of which will be located in the Story County fleet. We just received the contracts for those bus replacements earlier this month, so I had requested if Deb could add this onto today's agenda because we were already going to be coming here and kind of combining these. So our request is to have the county pay the 15% local match on those seven vehicles, which the grant is only covering 85%, so the 15% does have to be a local match, which we have historically requested from the county. So the total of that 15% total on all seven vehicles would come to $97,725.
So how many vehicles are there in Story County? How many do you maintain?
There's about 18. The 18. Seven that we're replacing through this grant are 2008 and 2009 model years. And the type of buses that we purchased, they have a federal useful life of 4 years, 100,000 miles. So they're well past their useful life. Part of our asset rate did take into consideration the cost savings on maintenance by replacing the vehicles, because as they age, they are much more costly to repair. And these seven vehicles do have at least 290,000 miles on them, some of them well above 300,000.
Do you happen to recall how many of the vehicles in the Story County fleet you replaced 2 years ago and 4 years ago when there were smaller amounts of money that were requested? I'm just wondering what we might be looking at 2 years from now.
That is a great question. Unfortunately, we don't have a good way of forecasting the federal dollars that come. This is a grant outside of the typically budgeted. This was something that the Iowa DOT submitted on behalf of the 16 rural transit systems across our state. So there is a transit asset management kind of programming of all of the vehicles in Iowa. Iowa does have the second oldest fleet in the nation, so it's not just HRTA with an aging fleet. It is, you'll see that across the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, if I remember correctly, 2 years ago, I believe we replaced three or four of the vehicles here in Story County. I know in the past it's been much smaller amounts at one time. Again, this federal grant is something that was unusual for us to receive.
And they're normally two-year grants? Or was it a different grant that you received 2 years ago?
It was a different contract for bus replacement.
But maybe about 4 2 years ago and seven now, so that's 11 out of our 18.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, I mean, we want to see new vehicles, and taking advantage of the federal funds is an excellent thing. Just wanting to think about, you know, is this amount going to be something we see regularly? And I think what I'm hearing is no.
No.
It's a higher amount.
Yeah, I've been here almost 9 years. Julia has been with HRTA for 9 years, actually next month. And we have not seen this many vehicles replaced in one county during that nine-year period of time. This is very unusual for us.
Right, but it's an opportunity for us to pick these up at $14,000. Per vehicle, which if we get that opportunity and we've got an aging fleet, which clearly we do, I believe we got to find a way to take advantage of something like this. What I would encourage is that we really start thinking hard about, is your sole matching fund source in the future going to be Story County, or is there a way to look to broaden that pool a little bit? Because it's more than just Story County that's benefiting from this. To me, it was easier the last few times because I think we were talking in terms of, as I recall, is in that $30,000 range that we were putting forward. And we, Deb, if I'm not mistaken, we were able to find the funds out of asset, at least in one of the cases, we were able to find the funds out of asset. We're not able to do that now. So Lisa, as I see it, this is straight off the general fund.
Correct.
And so it's another $100,000. Now I'm looking at this as this is next fiscal year that we would be doing that. And so hopefully we've built in some capacity there. But for the future, I would encourage us just to broaden our thought on where the matching funds are going to come from. Not asking to leave Story County out, because I think that's appropriate. I just don't know that we should be the sole ask.
Okay. We have, and I don't recall discussing this with the board of supervisors in the past, but HRDA, our board had actually approved that we work with our attorney to establish a separate standalone 501c3 called Heart of Transit. And we have submitted, we have the EIN with the state of Iowa, and we've submitted all the documentation to the IRS. So we're just waiting on the approval. We did get a letter in March saying, I find a little irony in this, that if we're approved, we'll know in 90 days. And if we're not approved, we'll know in 120. So we're about 60 days through that. So I was hoping that 30 days or 31 days, I'll have an idea about that. But our goal was with that 501c3 that HRDA would be able to seek private dollars to help fund not only local metro bus replacements, but other projects in the future as well. While HRDA could still maintain being a governmental body and
sure.
being able to order our vehicles off of the state grant and things like that.
So I'd like to ask Assistant Auditor Markley, do we have the capacity next year for this?
As I just said a minute ago, when you look at the end of your year, about 23% in the general fund unassigned.
Mm-hmm.
That usually comes in 5 to 6% higher than we anticipate. I've already made a note to put that into next year's budget amendment. Do we have the capacity? I think we'll know more after the year end and how the new year starts.
Okay.
Yeah, a simple answer. We have the capacity. The question is, how healthy are we going to be? So,
right.
we're going to be in that 26 to 28% unassigned ending fund balance range. Clearly, we have $100,000 there, but you need to know that that's unbudgeted for next year, and it's going to reduce what you're able to carry over from year to year.
Okay, thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah, I'll move match the night. So our portion of the match would be $97,725. And just underscore as part of the motion that it would be my hope and expectation that the next time a request like this comes forward, Story County is not being asked to do the full match, just part of a match.
I would second the motion and the sentiment. Further discussion? If not, Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thanks, Brooke. Good job.
Next, Deb Shoulders on discussion and consideration of revisions to the asset policies and procedures.
So the asset admin team has completed its annual review of the policies and procedures, and we have a few items that I want to point out to you. The full policies and procedures manual was part of the agenda packet, and the highlighted areas are in that document. But I think the first and foremost significant change is the role of the Central Iowa Community Services, the Mental Health Region. They are going to continue their involvement with the asset process, but it's going to be a little bit different going forward in fiscal year 20. They would like to continue having a staff person on the admin team, so Carla Webb will be that representative. They will continue funding for the asset administrative expenses and the individual who helps the asset admin team. As far as putting dollars into the allocation process, that's what's going to change. Many of the services that are funded by the region that go through asset right now are fee-for-service dollars. So that doesn't necessarily need a recommendation coming from the volunteers, because the region is going to fund those services regardless of what the allocation is. They may go over the allocation, they may be under the allocation, but that is their commitment and their charge is to provide those services and fund those services. So fiscal year 20, they will not have dollars within the allocation process, but Carla Webb will be sharing that information as part of the service coordination piece that Asset does so that the other funders around the table know where the funds are for mental health services and how that will look in the bigger picture. She'll keep the volunteers abreast of that as well. The other change that, that happens with that is we have two agencies in the asset process right now that are solely funded by the region, so Mainstream Living and Friendship ARC are two of those agencies. They will no longer have to go through the asset process unless they're requesting funding from another funder.
Mm-hmm.
So if they aren't requesting any dollars from another funder in fiscal year 20, they will not have to submit a budget. But we did make accommodations within the asset procedures then to allow any agency that drops out of the asset process to only have to fill out the new and expanded service form within the first 3 years that they've dropped out of the process. They don't have to fill out the whole asset application, but we will allow them to fill out a different form and then also provide comparative audits for those years as well. So we have a financial picture to look at. So those are the big changes. The other change, we're eliminating the option to submit paper copies of documents. We're doing everything electronically. So we've been doing that.
I like it. We were still requesting 6 paper copies.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. We weren't getting those, but it's time to remove that language. We're also eliminating language regarding reports from the DCAT and the Empowerment or ECI board.
Right.
We'll get that information as needed and as requested. We've got agencies who are very good about using those two funding sources, so we no longer have to find them or ask them if they went through those processes. So we are limiting the language on those reports. We're also emphasizing, and this is on page 8 of the Policies and Procedures Manual, emphasizing the need for agencies to collaborate and coordinate their services with one another. I think this might get to the duplication issue that seems to be bubbling up from time to time, and it also encourages efficiencies amongst the agencies and in working together and providing those services. So that's something that Asset will be watching very closely. I believe everything else, just clean up, getting rid of some typos and renumbering things just to clean up the policies and procedures. So that is the scope of what we've worked on this last review.
So the region is moving more into a role like DHS used to have on the asset process.
Yes, good point.
I'd move approval to the revisions of the asset policies and procedures.
Okay. Second. Further discussion? If not, Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carried. Thank you, Deb. And now you want to talk about the asset process review.
Yes. So we had a meeting of the joint funders on May 1st, and it was to take a look at the entire asset process, get feedback and comments on what funders are interested in and what they want to see as far as priorities going forward. It's been quite a while since we've had that level of discussion with the funders, so I think it was very timely to bring them all together. We had representatives from the City of Ames, Story County, the Mental Health Region, and United Way of Story County. Had a very, very good discussion. Some of the themes that came out of that meeting were the limitations around asset funding, so these are local dollars, and looking at asset as maybe being that funder of last resort versus the funder of ongoing kinds of services that may not necessarily meet priorities. We talked about not using those dollars to replace lost grants or reduce state or federal funds, how that would look for agencies. We know these agencies go through a lot of changes, especially when it comes to Medicaid dollars and other federal kinds of funding. And should asset funds should support existing services before being used for new proposals, but only go to existing services if that service continues to be justified. So just looking at the fact that requests come in at a much higher level than what we have dollars for. So how do we manage that? Another high point was an assessment, integrating an assessment into the process so agencies have something to look at and refer to. Funders have something to look at and refer to when setting priorities, so that we're all looking at that common set of data, that common set of information that was brought up several times throughout the conversation. We do have the five-year community health assessment or need assessment that's done, and we do reference that right now in the asset reference manual when agencies are looking at newer expanded services. Is that the assessment that we want to continue pointing to, or is there something else that we need to look at? So that was part of the discussion. Another high point was established a share funder priority. So using that common needs assessment, is it possible for funders to look at establishing shared priorities or parameters regarding the funding? What would that look like if we were to use consistent language in those priorities? Should we consider looking at core services and supplemental services, so what is really needed here in the community, and then what can help enhance or bolster those services? We know from history that there are services that have been in the asset process for many, many years, but then we've also brought new services in over time, so where would those land within core or supplemental? Of course, shared outcomes. We've been working towards outcomes with Asset Now for, I think I found some documentation from 2003. We started collecting information. We're using the Clear Impact Scorecard here in the last couple of years to help us identify trends or trends, but what other kinds of mechanisms and tools are out there to help us track outcomes. So those are the impressions that Asset admin team came away with from that meeting. We want additional direction as far as where do we go from here with all that information. So we've got three options here. Do you want to confirm with those themes and have Asset staff proceed with developing an action plan to carry out those themes? Is there anything that you'd like to have amended? And if so, then we would bring that back to all funders to look at and consider. Or do you want to hold another joint funders meeting to look at this information and have an ongoing conversation before looking at any action planning?
So I'll start. I saw real value in the May 1st meeting. I thought it was outstanding to get pulled together. I would hope that that will be something that will become a more regular, and I'm not talking about annually by any stretch, but a more regular occurrence as we get new boards and new councils. I think there is real value in doing that. But I have to say I agree with the themes, and I would like you guys to proceed with developing an action plan based on the themes that are stated here.
I was particularly glad to see the emphasis on the shared priorities, because when you look at the priority list, what you see is they're pretty similar. And sometimes it's only the language that was used that was different. So having the volunteers, having people have to look at three different sets and then discover, oh, 1B is the same as 2C on the other list or something like that. And I think we're serving the same residents. I do realize that there may be some additional priorities that one area might have, one entity that another one would not. But I think just moving towards the shared priorities is a very good strategy. And I also think that looking at the community assessment is going to help us really make sure we're getting the right priorities. So I was very pleased with it. The core versus supplemental, I would say, probably is going to take quite a bit of work. So you'll probably come up with a timeline for doing different things. I am very comfortable with the asset administrative team continuing to work on this and look forward to seeing a final product. So that can just be direction. I think we're consistent here. Direction from the board. Is that what you were looking for?
That is.
Okay.
Say that again. No, discussion and direction.
Direction.
Yep, that's all right. Good job, Deb, as always.
Well, thank you. And before I leave the seat, I want to thank you, Rick, for your ongoing involvement and support of assets the past 9 years. I think, as we all know, it's an ingrained part of our community to ensure successful human service programs for citizens. So thank you for that. And maybe at some point you would like to be a volunteer.
Always get that plug in.
Thank you, Deb.
Okay, then we're moving on to agenda item 7, discussion and consideration of signing a letter of support for the Iowa pre- and post-arrest diversion application. Jessica Reynolds, good morning.
Good morning again. So I'm pleased to announce that the Office of Drug Control Policy has selected Story County as one of 3 jurisdictions in Iowa to apply for a joint U.S. Department of Justice arrest diversion grant. And so one of the things that I'm doing is quickly getting the items that they need, the Office of Drug Control Policy needs by tomorrow to make that application for us. So we're really excited about the possibilities that this brings. We are in a tight timeline. And so I'm here today to request that the board support this grant application. The Story County Attorney's Office would be the lead agency, but we have a lot of support. The current letter that I have that I'm requesting the board sign to support this, we have commitments to sign from Creative Counseling Services, from Ames Chamber of Commerce, from Dr. Matt DeLisi of Iowa State University, Central Iowa Community Services, Community and Family Resources, Primary Health Care, Story City PD, Huxley PD, Nevada PD, Iowa State University Police Department, Ames PD, the Sheriff, and Huxley PD. And we have a really supportive community who's looking to help us divert nonviolent drug offenders from our incarceration system. Also, if you would commit to being on our advisory board, should we receive this grant, it would be a commitment of 1 meeting per month.
Okay.
I think it's phenomenal. I think it is another demonstration of how Story County is forward-thinking and looking to improve every step of the way. And, Jessica, so appreciate your leadership on this. I assume you were talking to Linda about the commitment of one meeting a month, and
yes,
I'm
and
sure she'll be
this.
Phenomenal. So I would move that we support the letter.
And I would second that motion. Any further discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Thank
motion
you.
Carried. Thank you very much. You want a signature? Okay. Excuse me a second while I get this. Jessica, can I get a copy?
You can. I have to give
this
to the
Okay, so now we have Jerry Moore for discussion and consideration of Resolution 19-117, voluntary annexation request by Friedrich & Sons and Friedrich Land Development Company.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
I have a PowerPoint presentation ready for you, but since the computer is updating, I'll wing it from here. this is a voluntary annexation request, and it's represented by Kurt Friedrich, who's representing Friedrich and Sons, Inc. and Friedrich Land Development Company. Mr. Friedrich is here today if you have questions for him. It's a request for a voluntary annexation that involves 3 parcels. They're in the northwest part of Ames. The parcels are contiguous to the city's corporate limits. The properties are just south and adjacent to Cameron School Road, west of George Washington Carver, in section 20 of Franklin Township. Contains a little over 103 acres. Property is also in the Ames River Fringe Plan. It is designated urban residential. These are areas in accordance with the policies of the Ames River Fringe Plan. These are areas that can be annexed and developed under city standards. Typical density ranges anywhere from 3.75 units to 10 units per acre. According to the Ames Land Use Policy Plan, The voluntary annexation is considered to be in a non-incentivized growth area, just outside one of the planned north planned growth area, which requires the property owner developer to extend and pay for sanitary sewer. There's a pre-annexation agreement, and these things I think will be worked out prior to the city taking action on this, which I'll get to that in a second. But it addresses proposed improvements to the adjacent roads in addition to the potential for improvements to the intersection, agreement with the Xenia Rural Water, which provides service in this area, for territory buyout or transfer agreements. According to the county engineer, we have a current 28E agreement with the city of Ames. We are currently removing snow and ice on George Washington Carver, just north of Weston Drive. The area that will be proposed here for annexation, the state law requires that the boundaries go to the center of the road right-of-ways, and normally that means that, in this case, the city would take up the maintenance for those areas that are being annexed. The state law, just a few of the requirements, Ames is to send a notice to the Board of Supervisors, City of Gilbert, because they're within 2 miles of the proposed voluntary annexation within 14 days before the City Council takes action. There's also a notification or a notice requirement to be published 10 business days before the City Council action. If the City Council approves the annexation, and the resolution, they submit the resolution and the annexation proposal to the City Development Board, who takes action, and normally that's done within a 30-day window. This property was before the Board of Supervisors back in November 14, 2017. The Board looked at a Ames Urban Fringe Plan amendment that included these three parcels, that included property to the east, to the north, the Borgmeyer property, the Irons, the golf course, to change all of it to urban residential. And so the board did approve that request. This is the first stage to address the Ames Urban Fringe land use designation, the first stage in the annexation process. This request was challenged by the City of Gilbert. They ended up supporting a amendment to the plan, which included everything from George Washington Carver West and then south of Cameron School Road. It was also supported by the City of Ames. The Ames Planning and Zoning Commission approved this voluntary annexation May 14 at their meeting, and it will be before the City Council on July 9 for action. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
So when we, as I recall in November, when we approved the change on the urban fringe plan, we also asked for a traffic study. Has all that been completed and discussed?
Correct. That was that actually also included a commercial note that was requested by the Mr. Friedrich, and that was also supported by the city, and the traffic study was submitted.
Okay.
Does the applicant wish to add anything?
Sure. Hi, Kurt Friedrich with Friedrich Companies, and thank you, Jerry, for the summary. Good job. We're not just flying through this process. As Jerry mentioned, we started this back in 2017 when we went about finding out what the city and the county wanted in terms of whether this should be developed in the city or in the county. And it was determined at that point that our properties should be developed in the city of Ames. So the fringe plan was changed accordingly and change to urban residential, which is the typical precursor for land use change prior to annexation. So subsequent to that, We were asked to investigate a traffic study, which the city took on, and then just recently received that back. And then we've had some meetings, a couple of meetings actually, with both the city and the county supervisors. Merkin and Sanders have attended those, and we're trying to navigate through what traffic improvements, particularly at the intersection there of George Washington Carver and Cameron, would be appropriate and when. And out of that, even though our properties represent only a quarter of the intersection, and after the annexation, assuming that goes forward, still three-quarters of that intersection will be remaining in the county. But as has been discussed and is well known, I think the city is anticipating the Borgmeyer property coming into the city here at some future date. We just don't know when that's going to happen, and Stang Road would be extended through and connect at this point. So it is an important intersection to think through, and we're trying to do that. As Jerry mentioned, we've gotten approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission in Ames just recently to move forward with the annexation, but we're, as it's been true to our past here, we're not racing through this process and want to work with the city and the county to figure out what the best solution is for this intersection. At the most recent meeting, I was asked by the county and the city to present, which we will, to present what our preference would be for the type of intersection. It was noted in the traffic study that the intersection should at some point, potentially around 2034 was what was indicated in the report, be improved to either a roundabout or a signalized intersection. It was not stated that improvement is imperative that be done immediately, but that traffic would likely warrant it by 2034. So we're trying to sort through again what improvement would be appropriate. We'll submit a letter to the county and the city at their request, what our, based on the information that's been collected, what we think is the appropriate and prudent type of improvement and what we would be willing to contribute. I see this as a joint venture, obviously, between those three bodies and maybe future players, Borgmeyer's property being one that we need to, I think, consider in this process as well. Also having some discussions, too, just to make sure that I understand, we understand what concerns and issues there may be for some of our adjoining neighbors. We're having discussions there as well, and want to vet those concerns out. See, Jamie is here today. We're planning on connecting here soon to have some discussion about those concerns, issues here before going forward with any kind of recommendation on the intersection. So.
Thank you. And Jamie Wader, did you want to make a statement? You contacted.
I sure would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Kurt.
I was contacted by Dr. Wader earlier about a statement.
I'm Jamie Wader, 3309 Cameron School Road. I have some comments regarding the potential improvements that will be needed on Cameron School Road, George Washington Carver, but particularly Cameron School Road since I live on it. My comments are also reflective in general of my neighbors, Tyler and Ashley Scudder, 3244 Cameron School Road, who lives to the south of me. As has been presented here, this is a very important intersection.
Mm-hmm.
I think the board has discussed in the past that maybe foresight to this intersection would have been good 5-10 years ago before the irons got put in. So this is a very important intersection. As you know, right now, those two roads are busy. That means that intersection is a three-way with a little small tag going to the east for the irons. Cameron School Road is a grooved concrete road, fantastic road as far as maintenance issues and things like that, safety, but it's fast right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's 50 miles per hour. With these proposed developments that Mr. Friedrich is proposing to place at that southwest corner of Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver, not only will there be a lot of homes, but this commercial node really complicates traffic around there. It's a pretty tight space. There's a significant natural gas pipeline easement that bisects Cameron School Road. And then there's 3 acre owners, myself, Scudders, and Dave Jameson. We have some concerns about the quality of life for the 3 acre owners along Cameron School Road if and when the commercial and residential development occurs. Particularly, there will be at least 3 more points of entry and egress along Cameron School Road between the intersection and Bella Woods Drive. That adds to the 3 egresses for our 3 acreage properties, plus there's an entrance to the Christ Community Church on Cameron School Road as well. So there's a lot of things going on in a very short segment. So I think our concerns are twofold. One, we're concerned about what do the future road improvements have for us as property owners. Are we going to see 3 or 4 lanes be plopped down in front of our acreages? Mm-hmm. How are we supposed to get in and out of our homes if there's that much, you know, traffic to navigate? Also, we're concerned about speed. So our plea to the board, and this probably might be one of your last shots to have any say in this because Ames, the city of Ames is coming and will probably take over that intersection in the not too distant future. We'd like to see a significant speed reduction along Cameron School Road between that intersection, whatever happens at the intersection, the intersection of Bella Woods Drive. We'd like to see that drop from 50 to 25. And we'd also like to avoid, at all possible, any widening of the road between our properties.
Mm-hmm.
It's both for quality of life and safety for our families. You know, Scudders have two tiny children, an infant and a 4-year-old. I got 2 teenage boys. One's driving. We get on and off that road a lot. So obviously our concerns are really tied to our quality of life and our families, and really understand that the city of Ames wants to develop that land and certainly understands that Kurt Friedrich and his associates want to develop that land for both residential and commercial, but we definitely want our voices to be heard on this issue going forward, and I think both city of Ames and the county should hear our voices.
I want to thank you for your concerns. I think you know that I'm a Franklin Township resident, so I know the traffic there and the intersection very well. I understand the concern about the amount of traffic. I don't know what we can do to lessen the traffic on that road, but we can look at what the traffic, what the speed limit should be given the traffic, given those conditions. And we are in a process, and it's Mr. Friedrich, the ball's in his court right now in terms of a proposal. And I agree with what he said about there are really at least three parties involved in this, so I'm glad that there's people here from the city to hear you as well, because eventually that intersection will be undoubtedly in the city limits. So we all need to be talking and planning about that and what happens there for the safety of everybody who lives around there and everybody who commutes to one place or another through that intersection. So thank you very much.
And just before Jamie gets away, I'd say thank you, Jamie. I tend to agree with most of your remarks, probably. With the exception that any connotation that there's not going to be development to the south kind of along that corridor, it's coming and we've got to figure out how to handle it. But I think we, and I'm the only one who's still sitting here from these days, so I'll take the full blame. We missed a few years ago when we didn't really address this intersection. I mean, the reality is, from the time the church went in, that went from being a sleepy country intersection to growing. And then you look at the developments that we've done, not only, you mentioned the irons, but we've done some other developments along Cameron School Road. I think the paving of Grant, Gretton, Hyde and the developments that are going on along there have impacted this intersection. It is much too fast through there. We're just having trouble figuring out the appropriate mechanisms to slow it down. The county is pretty bound by the DOT regulations for what we do with roads. I think the city is a little less bound as we see ultimately annexation along there. I think we're going to see some things happen. I hope that we're able to put in an intersection that does some control of speed. I think Kurt's 100% right that the ball's kind of in his court right now to make the initial proposal of what might happen and who might pay for it. Then I think there's going to be some pretty major conversations of how all of it comes together. I want you to know that I hear you loud and clear with the ideas of widening the road as it relates to the area between the residences that already exist there. I haven't seen anything that causes me to fear that that's what's coming. I think everything that we're talking about at this point would occur east of you, more along the church property and over into the intersection. But I think the concerns you bring forward are really warranted and valid, and thank you for bringing them forward.
Thank you. Do you have any other questions?
I'd move resolution 19-117. We've got a lot of work to do here, but I think this is how it starts.
Okay, and I would second the motion. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution 19.117 is adopted. Now, to go to the next agenda item, we have discussion and consideration of contract with the City of Ames for the Healthy Life Center construction cost, $2 million over 3 years. And Jeff? And Jeff, thank you.
The agreement before you was initiated by the City of Ames, and this reflects action that the board took in March regarding the Healthy Life Center, and it spells out the payment obligations for the capital dollars totaling $2 million, as well as the annual amount for operating expenses. The duration of the agreement is written here to be 25 years after the date Healthy Life Center opens to the public. And one of the things that the operating expenses by the county participating in operating expenses does is it allows residents from all over the county to be able to participate and use the Healthy Life Center at the same cost as City of Ames residents. So that's what kind of aligns those dollars. The agreement may be terminated if the Healthy Life Center does not get constructed, so that would null and void this agreement. After 25 years, the agreement can be extended or renegotiated by mutual consent of the parties. If the agreement is terminated, though, and the county no longer provides those annual dollars for operating expenses, then residents outside the City of Ames would be paying a different cost to participate in the facility. So those are some of the highlights of the contract.
I had a chance to review it, and it is in order
to be voted. Yeah. Any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Would entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move approval.
Okay, and I would second. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Linda, the only thing I'm going to point out is that, and this is just housekeeping for you to keep in mind as you go, that as this thing goes forward, the vision was when we approved this that we would run it through, or one possibility would be that we would run it through our TIF process and look at funding it along those lines as an economic development opportunity. And I just encourage you to keep that in mind when you start thinking of these payments of $666,000. Starting in 2020, assuming that everything goes like you guys want it to go with the referendum.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Next, we have department reports. Conservation quarterly report, Mike Cox. And thank you to the city officials for being here. I guess we had no questions of you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
I'm going to talk about a few different, to give you some updates on several different things that conservation has been working on, and all of those things have been touched to some degree and mostly to a significant degree by Rick Sanders enabling those and facilitating those. So I'm not going to touch on everything Rick has done over your tenure for conservation, but suffice it to say it's been significant, and it's noticed by staff and ultimately by our citizens. This county is a better county as a result of you sitting in that seat and having leadership. So thank you. Some of those things. Number one on my list, Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. I hope you all have June 28th on your calendars. That will be our grand opening. Starting at 3 p.m. that day and wrapping up by 6. So tremendous opportunity, tremendous project in so many different ways, and I won't get into all that. You guys are familiar with it. It will increase the quality of life in the county and the community significantly, and I think really position us to not only accomplish some really valuable work in community betterment and conservation, and also kind of lead the way and show some other communities, some other counties, some other cities a way that they can do things as well in similar fashion. So we are underway with design on phase three. Phase three is the trail connection that will go from the middle roundabout from the middle roundabout on University out to R-38, and we're in final stages working through design and easement acquisition with the landowners along that route. And so we expect that we'll be able to go to bid this summer right after we get approval from the pending approval from the Board of Regents. So all looks good there. Part of Iowa Nature Trail paving project. We're a little slowed down by the weather here. The rain has slowed so many different projects down, and this is one of them. But this project will be the paving from Slater over to 535th, and then we think next steps on that will be working through our secondary roads department, engineers department, on improving 535th in the future. But that's going, that's moving ahead, and now we're looking at the next steps, and that is paving what we call phase two, which will be from Huxley over to the Skunk River or Cambridge. And so we're looking for that. We're looking for funding for that. We have some secured already for that. So tremendous opportunities. Mm-hmm. Prairie Rail Trail. Mayor Ziering was here earlier today. We're doing a trail construction project there. Again, the weather kind of has us stymied a little bit until it dries out, but that project will get completed this summer as well. Contractors are on board and just poised to continue the process. All the trees were removed. We had an April 1 deadline to get trees down. And so that's been done, but we haven't got in and done any further work yet. Hickory Grove Beach House construction. So we have the bidding is open right now. Bid period is open right now. We'll open those bids June 11th and hope to move forward with getting that all done yet this year. And so we'll have a new beach house by the time we have the lake open back up to the public. So tremendous opportunity there. I know that there's been some discussion about storm sheltering at Hickory Grove. You remember a couple of years ago we created a storm shelter there. We rehabbed or reconstructed a shower building at the campground and put a storm shelter there, the first storm shelter we've ever had, and placed it there to house 190 people. We looked at whether or not we should include any kind of storm shelter in this new facility, the beach house facility, when we were going through the interagency review and all the permitting process. Emergency management is involved in that as well. And the decision was that we have the existing storm shelter that we had just done, and that in order to create the beach house with a storm shelter capacity, it really needs to be rated as such and designed as such. To do that, it's probably $500,000 price tag. We opted with the new storm shelter so close that we would move forward with that. So that was a decision that was made. As far as the lake renovation, believe it or not, we had the lake almost empty, and now it's almost full. And so our progress is a bit slow there. Hopefully.
How many times have we had to drain that lake?
Oh, my goodness. As many times as it rains.
Yep.
Up until now, I would say our progress has been ahead of schedule.
Yep.
And so we may have even been looking at a fall completion on that project. Doubtful that that's going to happen now. We're probably back to our original completion deadline. Or timeline, I should say. But work is progressing. The contractor is, I would say, partway through their pipe installation process and through the dam. And again, that's something that we are getting as value added for this project. That came about through coordination with the DNR and funding from the DNR to the contractor. We're not part of that. And so DNR is really putting the bill on that, and it gives us a better project in the long run. So we're partway through that. Part of the pipe has been done, and the island has been expanded, and there's been several things that have been happening out there, but nothing at the moment with the lake almost back to its normal level. So we'll hope that subsides. The engineer did have to close, our county engineer did have to close 680, where they're at the park where the East Lake joins into the West Lake due to concerns over the culverts there. And so we're going to have some amount of loss in that road at the culverts. So that's going to be a long and ongoing process. It is not just going to be opened back up. It will have to stay closed for some amount of time. Dakin's Lake Cabin. You know that we had chatted about this one for some time, and when we did Dakin's Lake, which, by the way, I think I was maybe here for a week or 2 weeks in my tenure here in this position, and Rick called me aside and said, hey, let's go meet with the mayor at Zeering and let's talk about Dakin's Lake.
It was Mike's introduction to me.
Yeah.
He had hair at that point.
I had hair. There you go. And Rick said, let's make it happen. And we knew it was an issue, had been for a number of years, and so we made it happen. And so thank you for that leadership in doing so. We did plan, when we did the master plan for the new lake, we did plan for three cabins. Now we're moving ahead with one cabin, and we're working with a local firm here, engineer firm AVEC, and they're doing the design for us. We're moving through different design iterations, and at the moment our timeline is that we'll probably be ready to have a bid package available late summer, which maybe isn't ideal, but we think with the existing construction workload and construction climate here that might work really well. So we're going to remain hopeful on that. So that project, can't anticipate having a substantial completion by May of 20 on that project. So that's moving along nicely. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about water quality and give you some updates on this. Of course, Linda, you're very familiar with where we are in the implementing the water quality assessment that's been done, and so we've got lots of different irons in the fire moving that one forward, one of which is developing a countywide water quality monitoring plan, which we've had a few different iterations of that now, and we have a follow-up meeting this afternoon with the City of Ames and with Prairie Rivers of Iowa to flesh out a plan that, and I think it'll be a plan that accomplishes a lot of things. I think it'll be a plan that is kind of a gateway for people to get involved in water quality and awareness, learning more about it, and becoming active in water quality protection. But I also think that it provides has a capacity to provide some real and some tangible hard data that we can base planning efforts on moving forward. So a number of different things that plan will accomplish, and so we're looking forward to being able to do that. I mentioned the grand opening on June 28th. I will say that if you haven't seen it, there's our latest newsletter sure you guys get these, but this is our calendar of events for the summer. Fairly loaded list of lots of different programs. As you know, I think one of the things that you helped enable with us is our ability for our environmental education program to be in all school districts, which it hadn't been for some time, and now we're back in every district in the county. And then in the off school time, we've got a very packed, a very loaded environmental education program with day camps, small trips to extended trips, short-term or short programs to long programs, from tots to seniors and everything in between. And so we've got a lot going on, and they do a fabulous job in environmental education. So I won't belabor that, but I will make sure you guys have copies of our newsletters. So other than that, the camping season this last weekend kicked off with even Hickory Grove being almost full. The campground is open at Hickory, we're struggling a little bit with people. Of course, it looks like our lake is a normal lake right now, and so people want a boat on it, and they want to fish on it, and they want to be active in the water. And we're struggling a little bit to get that message out there.
Yeah.
But Dakin's Lake was full as well over the weekend, and lots of activities, lots of people up there. So it's nice to see people out enjoying the parks. So that's all.
Well, I'm just going to say I've had so many joys in this job, but one of the true highlights, Mike, is working with you and your staff. Such a get it done kind of mentality, and I never felt like any idea was too outlandish. And we don't talk a lot about the ideas that we had that haven't come to fruition. We talk about some of the ones that have come to fruition, but the only way to get there is with a can-do attitude. And it's been so much fun working with you and your staff, and the impact that you guys have on the quality of life in Story County can't be overstated. It's so important. And I'm completely confident and convinced that that's going to continue. I know, Linda, that's a real passion of yours. Some of the conservation practices and the quality of life that we can offer. The other one of the great things about my new position is my new office overlooks the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. And Mike, I'm just going to put a plug in. I am not going to be satisfied until next summer. I see multiple day camps with kids running everywhere down in the stream and learning all they can about what it means to conserve. So really excited about continuing contact with you and your department.
Likewise.
I have a question.
Yes.
Prairie Rail Trail, we're currently paving that from Highway 65
into Zering.
Right. Where are we in planning? Because I get asked from folks in McCallsburg, what's going to happen west of there? And probably looking towards Story City as well, or close to there. What is the long range plan we've got right now? Are we looking at that?
Long range plan for the Prairie Rail Trail is to have it paved, and to have it paved from Zering all the way over to Roland, and then from Roland develop a new trail alignment and actually connect a trail into Story City and have that paved.
Okay.
That is our long term goal.
And
shorter
term. Go ahead. What is the cost to pave?
The figure that we've been using is $400,000 for a new trail. $400,000 per mile for a new trail.
Per mile.
When you already have an existing alignment and bed, you know, you can see some savings on that. The existing Prairie Rail Trail is, you know, I'm going to say 95% of it, 90 or more, on an existing rail bed. And so that affords us some savings there. But in general, we use a planning figure of $400,000 per mile.
Wow.
I will say right now that we've got in the FY20 budget, and I know this is of particular interest to McCallsburg, but in the FY20 budget, we do have $10,000 in there for trail improvements. And for the most part, that's going to consist of surface improvements, so more limestone through town there. And then talking about the vegetation along that trail, maybe putting some native prairie along that trail as well, which will look really attractive through town. So a high flower content in that, it will look really nice. And then I will say also we're looking at doing some additional trail PRT or Prairie Rail Trail improvements as well, mostly to the tune of surfacing it also. Some of that might be in McCallsburg as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, for everything you're doing. You've been really busy right now. Other reports. And I put this agenda item on, funding requests received from cities of Nevada and Story City. And I see Matt Martison and Mark Jackson in the audience. And I'm sorry I didn't talk to you ahead of time about this. We've talked about these requests, and I'd like to give you a little bit of time to explain them to us. But the reason I put them on the agenda today was to get them formally accepted by the county, because we've been batting them around a while because we're trying to find the funding source that some thought existed and we couldn't. But I appreciate you being here today, and if you would like to address these funding requests, but we won't be taking action on them today.
I like that shirt, Matt.
That
stands out.
Help me.
And I had meant to talk to you beforehand, but it was a long weekend and got caught up with some other things, so I apologize.
Thank you. What I was looking at it up on the wall back last year, we talked about some funding sources.
for the grants for all three communities of Nevada, Story City, and Huntsville as well. For the RISE grant applications for the three projects that each community that has coming the expansions that were on the horizon. So I believe at one point in time there was discussion from the board to assist in that process, and that's where we left it. It would have been in February, Mark Jackson, John Holloman and I met, and I'll let John kind of describe the conversation, but we kind of met to look at what that might look like for each community to try and give you an idea of what our needs were at that time based on those rights grants.
And so I think what you have are the two letters from Story City and Nevada outlining that. I think John, not speaking on behalf of John Haldeman and Huxley, I think he is still waiting on finalizing what his project will be in the amount required.
Mm-hmm.
So when the three of us got together, we thought that to ask for the least amount that we needed, I think was it, and so that one community did not come in asking for the full amount, but what truly who needed what type of thing. And that's why you have, I think our amount is $27,000, which would be approximately 10% of which our RISE match would be. And I think you're, what, it's 60? Is that approximately?
It is at 60,000, which would have been about 10% as well.
As well. And so we didn't have Johns. But that was the reason why the three of us is to make it somewhat easier about the dollar amount and where we would be coming from so that we were all sort of uniform in what we were asking and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll jump in since I was sitting on the board when we were having these conversations. As we went through talking about the letters of support as these projects came down the road, funding was one of the topics. And what we realized at that point was that was too complex to add in to our offer. So the specifics of it was too complex to add in to our offer of support. Is actually a concern that Supervisor Olson had, but we went ahead and passed our letters of support, recognizing that that didn't automatically tie anything to that support, just we were supportive. I think what you're requesting here, and I'd like to see Huxley's along with it, is right in line with what we were talking about. I just am one of those that I believe we have a process in place to consider these, and we need to follow through the process, and I don't see Leanne here anymore. I think she had something else she had to be at. But I think we need to funnel these requests through the existing process that we have. But I think you guys are right on the money with what you're – this is my – since I'm not going to be one of the ones voting on it ultimately, I'll just tell you, I think you're right on line with what I had envisioned the county's level of participation. And I think just run it through the existing process, Linda, which I think is in conversation with staff, that's what you come to, isn't it?
Yes, but the existing process only allowed each community to have one grant application.
Are you guys expecting to have more than this?
Our understanding was when this topic first came up, and what was that this would be a separate pool of funding that the county has focused on a number of projects within the city of Ames, and then through its contract with the Ames EDC, the other communities, excluding Story for economic development purposes, excluding Story City, Nevada, and Huxley, that I always refer to us as sort of the Jan Bradys of the county. And so there would be this pool for economic development, and these three, our three
yeah.
cities would be able to access that. And Leanne made a presentation, I believe, in December
yep.
With that, and then it was decided to wait until the new board came on,
right.
and then it sort of kind of dropped from there, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're stating exactly right. The problem is it doesn't exist. I mean, you know, I think there was some intention from some of us that it was going to exist. I see Brenda Dreyer sitting out there. I know Brenda and I work pretty closely on this. But as we sit here today, that other pool does not exist. If that other pool existed, then I would see this. But what I'm suggesting to you, and I think if I'm not mistaken, Linda, it's somewhere in the $190,000 range that we have available to run through the existing process this year.
You're referring to the urban renewal area?
I am.
Area.
Yep.
Okay. 160? is the number we're kind of looking at.
And I think, I just think that's a low estimate. I think and when I add up the numbers, I think it's 190. But whatever it is, I believe that based on what we have existing today in terms of a mechanism to actually fund something, that that's where this has to be routed. It's either that or create the new funding mechanism.
Okay.
I'm good with that. I just want to clarify anything, but I appreciate taking the time to address this.
Yes. Sure. And right now, you know, Rick's correct, and I've listened to several audios of meetings that I wasn't at, as well as meetings I was at, and talked with the auditor's office, talked with our manager for Leanne Harder, and talked with, you know, other supervisors, just been in for information as to where we were, and we all came to the conclusion that yes, there had been a proposal made for this kind of a funding stream or for a funding for a project, but no funding stream was identified and it did not come to fruition. So what does exist right now is the Urban Renewal Area Grant Program. June 4th is when applications are due. And Mark, we talked about that, and you said you already had another application.
It would be the carousel
coming from your community,
correct.
So you didn't want to, you know, pull that and do this. And Mark, I think we may have chatted. I just don't know that the county is right now in a position to create this new program. I think it needs some time to kind of go through that and look at the other programs we have. And I guess that's why I said, you know, I've got these applications sitting here. We need to formally accept them, and that's why I put them on today. I think it may take us a little bit of time to figure out where we want to go on this. And so right now, I guess I'd say don't expect, you know, any answers soon on, hey, we have this new program and we've identified funds for it. But do you have anything else, Rick, that you'd like to add?
I would encourage, and again, I fully recognize that I'm not going to have any, even my normal one-third say in this. I would encourage us to include, even in addition to a separate project, I would encourage us to include consideration of these three projects. We don't see the one from Huxley yet, but Nevada, Story City, and Huxley as part of our process. And as we figure out how that 160 or 190,000 is going to get divvied up, maybe it means, Matt, that it's not the full 60 that you receive. Maybe it means it's a portion of that. But I'd like the board to fully consider these three requests in the same process, but also almost a little separately from any other request, including the carousel that might be coming in. That's going to be your call, and I'm just putting my two cents forth in for you to consider.
Well, we are holding other communities to one proposal.
No question about it.
So that's my concern, because I think some other communities may have already been told, no, you only have one proposal.
And I would hold all communities to one proposal, but I would suggest that these three proposals, by virtue of the letter of support that we offered 6 or 8 months ago, when we indicated that we supported the RISE grants for these projects, while we didn't tie any set dollar amount to it, I think not even considering, and I'm saying fully consider it and say, no, I'm sorry, we can't afford to do it, but not even considering doing something with those, I think, is a mistake. And again, it's going to be your call exactly how you route all this, but I just think it's important.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. Upcoming agenda items.
Don't look at me.
Anything you want on our next agenda?
I've already given you all the advice I can think of, Linda.
You're doing well. Appreciate it. We'll go to public forum number 2, comments from the public. Items not on the agenda. Of course, we can't take any action on them. I'm not sure there are members of the public who are still here, but... Okay. Close the public forum number 2. Open and close it. Liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. I have one, and
sure.
then I'll let you have some final comments if you would like. The Watershed Assessment Work Group has a meeting in this room tomorrow at 11:30. It's to receive an update from our drainage district engineer regarding a grant from Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship that they received. It's a very interesting topic, something to do with how drainage districts could actually be utilized to create wetlands in strategic areas. And we did do a letter of support, provide letter of support for that grant application, and now they have more to talk about. So if anybody who's here is interested, I see a couple people I hope are at least able to attend, Mike and Jerry, since you're part of that work group. Mike, you probably can't this one. We'll get you notes. Okay, but hopefully we can move forward on that. I'm leaving Thursday for a long weekend, going to Dallas, Texas, to watch my oldest grandson graduate from high school.
Outstanding.
I don't know how he's done that. He's only little. He's a little kid, but he's not. So anyway, after the watershed assessment meeting, that'll be my last official meeting, I think, for the week, and back at it next week. Rick, do you have any final statements, final thoughts before we adjourn?
Just very short.
We're still in the morning, so you've got a little bit of time.
This last 9 years has absolutely been the honor of my life. I've had an absolute blast. Good times and not so good times, and decisions we got right and decisions we got wrong, and every step of the way, it has been such an honor and privilege to serve not only with my counterparts on the board, both present and past, but our staff here at Story County is unbelievable. I mean, from top to bottom, so far from the negative stereotype that goes to governmental workers. And serving with each and every one of them is something that I will always cherish. I didn't expect to be leaving county government or elected office this soon, but sometimes opportunities present themselves that you can't say no to, and that's exactly what happened here. Linda, I'm so excited about watching the direction of Story County under your leadership. I'm excited about seeing I'm sure going to be an extremely capable person appointed to fill this role. There's no doubt we have some challenges that we're facing, but we're fully equipped and we have all the tools in the toolbox to be able to meet those challenges and go forward. And I'm just really excited to watch what you do with that. And finally, a big thank you to all of our staff and all the citizens of Story County for this opportunity. And there will be a lot of days I'll miss it, and then I'll read the Ames Trib and I'll remember that I don't miss it all that much.
We'll be thinking of you on those days. Where is he anyway?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Having no further business,
move to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Look at that.